when you decided to leave, just to quit hormones and leave chemistry, what, you know, did you miss chemical research since you've been so active at it?
No. I was on some classified work then with the United States and in Mexico, mm-hmm. jointly. And I was on that for part-time for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And about 56, I met a woman on the street. She had two big dogs. And I had met her before. She had a shop which she sold leather goods in. And she had moved around right back of the Geneva Hotel, about a half block one way and half block the other way. So it would be about a block to walk around to her place. And she told me that she was still selling leather goods. As a matter of fact, the briefcase that I brought in here today, I bought from her about 35 years ago. And she said that her father, who was a Frenchman who worked in Paris before. This girl was married to a Mexican, and she opened up a leather shop in addition to the husband's salary that she wanted to make some money on the side. She said that her father had retired from Paris, and he had a shop right across from the American Embassy in Paris, and he... She said she would like for me to meet him, so I told her that I would drop around there sometime. And he was interested in silver, and he had this silver shop right across from the American Embassy in Paris. And he originally, as a boy, he worked with Fabergé in Russia to make. Fabergé was making these eggs. You see, they have some at the Metropolitan Museum, but they're mainly in Paris. But he was forced to leave in 1916. He left Russia. Fabergé went to Switzerland, and this girl's father went to Paris. And she would only see him occasionally when she would go to Paris, because he was busy on that shop. But he had given up completely, and he had come to Mexico. And that he was selling in his shop a few things that he would buy as he would call it secondhand silver, that is like the bridge made and things like that. Well, I went in to see him, and I had gone several times. I had gone to the library at the Vatican in my work, and I had become familiar with. One of the, I guess you would call him a bishop, there that was in charge of things, and we talked quite a bit about various things, and he was interested. He wanted to know whether I had ever been to the Louvre, and I had been to the Louvre several times, and he said when you go in there, they keep in the basement locked up some of their valuable things. See if you can't go down to see those. He said that he was particularly interested in a vase which they had, which they kept locked up, and this vase came from Turkey, and it was supposed to be from the burial place of one of Nebuchadnezzar's generals. So he was quite interested in the vase. And a French woman found a Turkish man that was doing some he was doing some fishing on the side, but he came to her and wanted to know whether she wanted to buy some gold that he had melted down, and she told him right away that she knew that this came from melting down something that he got from a grave, that he was a grave robber. And if he would give her the original any original pieces that he had, she would buy that and the gold at the regular price of the selling price of gold, probably. So he couldn't turn this down, and this was one of the vases that he said that he wished that I would take a look at. Well, he'd been so helpful, Toby, that the next time I went to Mexico, oh, there's another thing that I saw at the Louvre that they showed me. And this was a drinking cup about a little bit bigger than this that was made for Anne of Austria. Hmm. And this was made of pure gold, too. And it's another of the things that they keep locked up. Well, I got pictures and the size and the weight and everything of these two items. I took them to this girl's father in Mexico and asked him whether they could be made. And he said, well, at your expense. He always said, at your expense, everything. I told him I'd like for these to be made in silver. I told him, and then I plated with gold. Well, this a plain vase there was a plain vase from Turkey. It was so good. I considered it as far as I knew a perfect reproduction. And I asked him what the price of it was. He told me the price, which was very cheap. I asked him whether he could make some more of those. So I wanted to give one to each of my sons, and I told him I wanted in silver to keep for myself. I kept the one in silver for myself, and I had three of them gilded, and the one I took to this bishop at the Vatican Library, which had been doing the work for me. And he was very pleased to get that. But I've given all of my silver to my two sons. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to get rid of it, not to be bothered with after I die. I don't know what they're charging for.
So that's how you got started in mm-hmm. silver reproduction.
So he made these two pieces for me. Then I asked him whether there were any other silversmiths in Mexico that he would recommend that could be trained into the Rococo. The Rococo is extremely hard because you know it has so many twirls and twists and things like that on it, and it costs many more times than the plain silver. For instance. One of the best workers on Rococo was Paul Lemarié. His parents were Frenchmen, but he was born. They took him to Holland, and he was born in Holland, and he then went to England with his parents, and he became a silversmith. But he was interested in making the Rococo. But he couldn't find anyone in England that wanted to put the amount of money in the Rococo that it would cost him. They all wanted plain things because they considered this as a place to put their money. Mm-hmm. So he only made a few pieces of the real Rococo. One of the pieces, I was at the Ashmolean Museum at Oxford University once. I was talking to the girl in charge of silver there, and I was looking at a particular piece that I had a piece of Paul Lemarié's that was listed as being at the Ashmolean Museum. Well, she asked me whether I could come to dinner with the one that was in ahead of her. So I went to dinner and we talked about silver the whole time. Well, it came out they wanted to know whether I had ever visited this shop on Regent Street, which was originally Paul and Marie's shop until it was taken over by Garrick. I think Garrick is the name of it. I told her no, I had never been in there. So I went in this shop. I was heading for London. My wife was with me at that time, and she had never seen Churchill's place and things like that. So while I went to the Ashbury Museum, she went out to on the regular tour, you see. I pulled that quite a number of times on her. Well, anyway, I walked in this shop, and they had a table in the back. And there was a big sign on it. It was about the size of this table. There was a big sign right in the middle, used silver. So I asked one of the clerks there, "Is this silver for sale?" They said, "Yes. Are you interested in it?" Sitting on right in the center was the piece that I was looking for, and it was made in 1902, and it was sold as used silver. It's the only Rococo, and the Rococo was made by a man who was the silversmith for Queen Victoria in 1902.
Well, that was a lucky find, wasn't it?
And I then asked them for it. They wanted to buy it back from me. Mm-hmm. Guards is the name of it. I gave the piece to my son, but I have a statement from them.
Well, that's very interesting. So how long were you active at collecting and commissioning silver pieces?
Well, that's the only piece that someone else made. That I bought the piece, because I was actually going to have my silversmith work on it.
Mm-hmm. And you found the original.
It was a reproduction. Mm-hmm. and he had this silversmith. He was the head of the silversmith of Paula Marie's shop. Mm-hmm. As his hobby, he would reproduce some of Paula Marie's work. That is, as his hobby in the night. Mm-hmm. And sell it to some of the lords or someone that would come in to buy it. But the guards told me that they took it off of the hands of one of the estates there.
Yeah.
They said it never had been used.
Hmm. Oh, interesting. So during those years, were you living mainly in Mexico or still in State College?
I was in... No, not that. I was in Mexico, I was in State College, and I was in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Oh. The son of this woman that had this leather shop. He then became interested in silver, and he's taken over this shop. And the workers that I had on Rococo, they either quit or died or something like that. But he's made a few before they quit or died. I left him in 1970, and this is. I see him occasionally when I go to Mexico, and this Leite is his name, and there is a small letter that I thought I was going to Mexico again, but he told me that Tani now is one of the six leading producers of silver in the Western world.
Hmm.
And they sell quite a lot of their products are sold to Tiffany's. And they have two shops that are set up here in the States, and they have, I think 8 or 10 shops in Mexico, different places in Mexico.
Hmm.
Well, the Rococo, here are a few pieces of Rococo that I found those. The original of that is the Cardinal of... You see, there's only, maybe 20 pieces of the best worker on Rococo that France has ever had that are in existence at the present time. Because Madame Pompadour needed money to fight the British, and she ordered all silver melted down.
Mm.
And there's a few pieces that escaped being melted. A few pieces that went to Portugal and a few that went to the brother of the king, mm-hmm. the Duke of Orleans. Now that's another one of his. That's a soup ball. Mm-hmm. But now that's in the Louvre. Now this is unusual. This is the original of that. It is a fruit ball. It's oval in shape, mm-hmm. and John Wayne was making some movies in Mexico, and he was out to the house of the ambassador, and he admired some of the silver that she had, and he asked where she got this silver, and she said that she got it at Tony's shop, the shop that I was working in. So he came in, and a piece that I didn't like, that I wanted him to make again, I had it for sale. That's how I got the money for making this silver. Because if I didn't like something, why, I sold it. And the price that he paid for that was around $4,000. But now, this is quite a veteran to me, because of the fact that the original exists, and I found a painting with a number of Germain's pieces in, and this is one of the pieces that's in there, so that I could get the size of the pieces, of the other pieces that didn't exist, from the size of this piece.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So, but the last piece that Tony had, one of my workers, when he was going to quit, they wanted this piece for show purposes in there, and I asked Vilner how much he was going to put on a price for that. He said if anyone wants to pay $40,000, they could get it. So I don't know what price they're having on it. The original is gilded. Now my son has the one that I like.
Yeah.
One of my sons.
Yeah,
but now this this there's a right at the corners here. There's men's heads. You can't see, but that's artichokes at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And this piece doesn't exist. This piece was in one of the paintings.
Oh. And so you had someone make it.
And I had my men work on that. Now these are not salt shakers. They're sugar shakers, and they're about a foot high. And these are in gilt, and the originals they don't exist. And they were in one of the paintings that I got. And these are goat's legs at the bottom there. And this is the same painting with two spice boxes. Now these are divided in the middle there. You put pepper in the one side and salt in the other side. And I had a pair of those made. This is the work of one of the Englishmen. And the original of this, I was surprised where I would get that. The original of that was bought by the Untermeyer estate in Yonkers, New York. And it's in Yonkers, New York, we used to live close to the Untermeyer estate, and I knew of it quite well. And I have made one of these for each of my, I have two sons, and I made one for each of the sons. And you can see this, first the silversmith asked me, how you see, I had down there a full-time artist that was working for me for the time that I was working there. I had about a half-time wood carver, because all of these were the pieces were carved in wood that were molded, and then they had to fit together from his carving. But they were wondering how they see this inside had chiseling on it. Just the same as the outside here, and how are we're going to do that? Well, you make two bowls, and you solder the two together.
Oh, I see.
So it was so simple. But anyway, now here, this shows me with the spice boxes, and this and here is this is a tea kettle, which is in the Louvre at the present time, but it was made from the Lord Mayor of London's daughter. Germain made it, and while they were fighting England. Now here is this piece here you see, and this I only have one of these, but I have a pair of these. These are wine corners. You see, these are dog's heads on the side here, cocker spaniels. And the first one of these that I made, the president of Mexico's wife used to come to the shop every once in a while to see what was going on there. This is a room which they cleared out in the back there, because the leather shop, eventually they gave up the leather shop completely. And here there was a whole wall here of things which I had, which I eventually brought home then. But anyway, she wanted to know whether she could have this to take to her home to show to some friends, the first one that I made of these. I told her sure she could take it home. Well, she never brought it back. And so I had the Leites, the man that had the shop here, Pedro Leites, call her up about it, because I didn't want to lose the piece. So she wanted to know whether it could be partially gilded, that she'd like to have it. Do you know who they gave it to? They gave it to Nixon.
Really?
That was the president of Mexico that was given to Nixon. And so then I made I had the silversmiths that I had trained in into the, to this work to make one for each of my boys. So that I have two. Now here I quit. I quit everything all of a sudden. That's the letter. This is one of Thomas Germain. Worked on Rococo, and his son then worked for the King of Portugal on Rococo, because he couldn't make it in France, because it was all nationalized. And this is from one of the paintings of Germain's work, and this is what I was going to work on when I quit.
Oh, that would have been something.
Well, the boys could have done it, and I was planning on making two. Now when I quit, I told them not to publish anything, because of the fact that I didn't want it known that I was living in the Geneve Hotel. I lived for 20 years. I lived in the Geneve Hotel, and I knew the manager quite well. He was a Canadian manager and owner. He and his wife quite well, and they gave. Eventually, their son-in-law took it over, and now at the present time, one of these firms in the United States bought it from the son-in-law. But anyway, this. They published this article, and this is the boy, and I'm sitting beside the boy. Here I am. These two here. I showed you the picture here.
Right. That one, yeah.
Here, I showed you Paul and Marie's picture here, but he's running the shop now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'd like to read that a little later. Brush off my Spanish. And when you
here is this this piece here.
So when you left, in this was in late 1969,
I left around 1970, and because of the fact that they published this, and everyone found out that I was still alive, I gave up silver, and then. I wondered meant to work on some of the designs which I had, and they weren't interested. They were only interested in this Rococo silver.
Mm-hmm.
So I was over in a place where Mexicans come to sell their. Wares on their art wares on Sunday. They have paintings. They have various other things. There was an Aztec Indian there, and he had made of brass copies made of brass, and then they were stuck onto wood with thumbtacks, sealed onto the brass, and then stuck onto wood of the Virgin of Guadalupe and some other things like that. This fellow, I asked him where he was working, and he said he was working for the government, and that he was working with a department that was interested in making money, and that he was doing this on the sideline. I asked him whether he would be interested in making some Maya pieces, and similar to what he had, and he asked me about what I would be interested in, and whether I could get pictures of them and bring them in the next Sunday to him there, that he would be there, he's there every Sunday. I told him yes, I could. So I brought him a picture of a Maya head that I got this from a publication that was taken from a Maya at Palenque. And he asked me whether I would come back in a few weeks. I went back in a few weeks. He had this on a block about a foot square, and it was painted in color. And I asked him how he painted. He said a girlfriend of his did the painting. And I asked him whether he could do some more. Well, it got so that I spent 5 years with him. And I went to him once when I was in Mexico. I would always go on a Sunday to meet him. And I asked him what he had for me. Well, he said the Mexicans wanted to know whether he could put on an exhibit in Colombia, in South America, of work that was done in Mexico, of some of these plaques. And he wanted to know whether he could send a couple of these plaques, a few of them, to Mexico for the exhibit.